So let me read Psalm 23 to you, and then we'll talk about that, do a meditation on Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. You are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Now, this has been a memory verse that people have resorted to for a millennia now. It's one of the Psalms, but it's a psalm that presents itself as a very comforting psalm, and a psalm that portrays the Lord as our great shepherd who walks along with us and shepherds us through the various affairs of life. And there are so many times where we find ourselves in confusion or even chaos, where the idea of a shepherd guiding us and walking with us is an amazing and a compelling idea. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And so you get the picture here of the God being our shepherd king, and he deals with us like sheep and like a shepherd. And I was thinking about this last night, and I was thinking, what are his virtues as a shepherd? What do we take solace in? And the first thing I thought of was his knowledge. A shepherd knows so much more than the sheep. If we work from the earthly picture or the earthly analogy. And so we see sheep in a pasture, and we know something of what those sheep know. So sheep are very simple creatures. It's like their brains are in slow motion. Grass, good grass. I'll eat the grass. sheep, they basically eat, and then sometimes they're afraid of things, and they'll run away. They'll be a little. One will start running, and then the others will follow, and they'll run to this side of the pasture or that side of the pasture. They're just very dependent on their simple minds. Well, compared to God, this is the way we are, and even with our sophistication, these things roll on. When I'm at the hospital, working at the hospital, and usually when I'm called to the hospital, it's because of death. It's because of a death, and so unhappily, I get to see a vast different number of people who are all faced with those kinds of circumstances, and they may react slightly differently, but death is a confusing thing for them. We're not used to it. There's no routine that we've established to deal with death. When we face death, we face something that's overwhelming to us, and it usually comes as a surprise, even when we've been sick, and people have been sick with some malady for a longer time. Still, the day that death comes, it always catches us by surprise, and we wonder, what we're to think. We have feelings of loss and feelings of loneliness, feelings of some despair, confusion. But that's us. That's what's going through our brains. But in the Lord, there is no confusion. He is like our shepherd. He is there. He understands all of the circumstances. He knows all of the dangers. He's nothing like the sheep and the psalm that are dumb creatures that basically are working to get to gain a full belly each day and then sleep. God is nothing like that. God knows all the dangers that lurk. The sheep can be there in the pasture. They would have no idea that there was a predator lurking about unless that predator manifested itself at the last minute. And then the sheep would be thrown into a tizzy. And you'd have them running this way and that. But not the Lord. The Lord is fully cognizant of all these things, and whatever events come to pass, he has foreordained them. So the Lord has a tremendous knowledge, and the shepherd has a tremendous knowledge that we don't have. Then think of the benevolence of the heart of the Lord. We are his covenant people. Therefore, we are in not just a relationship with him, but a committed relationship with him. He is fully committed to shepherding us toward the best end possible. He knows the end from the beginning. He knows good ends from bad ends. He knows blessings from curses. And so this shepherd has an intentional purpose for us that is covenantal. That means it's official in some ways. God, the Father and the Son have signed a covenant together to shepherd a people through to their eternal glory. And no matter what mistakes the people make, no matter what crises face their lives, even those circumstances of crisis and fear have been brought about by the Lord. And so he cannot be surprised. The sheep may run this way. The sheep may see the shepherd there in the pasture, and yet if they see a wolf or some other predator, they still run this way and that way. They're afraid the shepherd can't take care of them. And in terms of the earthly shepherd, despite his prowess, he probably can be surprised a bit by circumstances, but our heavenly shepherd cannot. And so the Lord has this long-term design for each one of us. I know a man today that sinned recently in his life. It involved an episode with alcohol. He was not given to drink, but he just got the idea of taking a drink, and his body reacted totally differently than it had. It was just a casual kind of a thing, but his body reacted differently, and then he, in front of his family, it looked like he was under the influence to some degree, and they asked him what was wrong, and he said nothing, and one thing led to another, and he ended up dissembling, and not telling them, no, I haven't had a drink, and then later it was discovered that that was what happened. He had, on his way home, he had purchased a small flask, taken a social drink, which shouldn't have affected him at all, but did. And now he was involved in a lie and a dissembling. And I thought of King David, and then it was a great embarrassment. I thought of King David and Psalm 51, where he confesses there to having sinned with Bathsheba, and how earth shaking that was. I mean, it was earth shaking to go through this sin in his life with Bathsheba, and then to plot to get Uriah, her husband, killed. But then Nathan comes and discovers David's truth in front of him and tells David he knows that he's lying. And so David pens this Psalm 51, have mercy upon me, O God, according to your loving kindness, according to the multitude of your tender mercies. Blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin, for I acknowledge my transgressions, and my sin is ever before me. Against you, you only have I sinned and done this evil in your sight, that you may be found just when you speak and blameless when you judge. And so here's David, and with all of his power, with all of the ability that he had to massage the circumstances of his life, he had people working for him, court managers, yet he sinned with Bathsheba, and then this whole thing came out in public. And he was confronted by the prophet that had been appointed to Israel at that time. And that prophet opened up David's sin to the whole of Israel. So here you are, you're the king of Israel, you're trying to carry on your kingly duties. You've sinned grievously, you've had a man killed, you've committed adultery with a woman that you lusted after in the night. You thought your sin would be hidden, you never thought that that sin would be discovered. And here it's discovered, and now you're supposed to, you're still the king, you're supposed to carry on with that office that you have in the midst of this tremendous personal crisis where the whole nation knows that you are a sinful slob. How do you do that? How do you do that? I just, as I mused on that, I couldn't imagine the most scoffing sinner in Israel would have said to David, if David tried to behave as king, he would have said, what are you doing? How do you dare stand before us and presume to be our king when you're in this obviously catastrophe of sinful behavior? And yet all of these things that come about by God's foreordination, God had made the hot night, God had sent Bathsheba up on top of her roof, God had enabled the circumstances that David awakened in his sleep and went out of his roof and saw this woman bathing some distance away. And God had developed the circumstances of David's mind where he was evidently lonely. He wasn't getting his fulfillment from the Lord at that time. And so it opened up the possibility of him seeking to get fulfillment from other people that he was not getting from the Lord. It's like, you know, you're not doing your devotions, you're not doing your prayers. That these simple things are so basic, people. And we say, well, what's the great secret to life? How do we get ahead? Well, do the simple things, do the small things, and pray that God leads you not into temptation, but he delivers you from evil. But David had skipped on the small things. Now he found himself in this big place. But you know, the amazing thing is that David, despite the catastrophe of his life, despite the catastrophe of that being published for all of Israel to know about and to see, despite all that, David had a heart after God. And he knew something of God being his shepherd. And so, as it were, he just put on his pants and he went and he did the job. He knew that anybody that wanted to raise the issue of his sin had a perfect right to do that. But he also knew that the Lord was his shepherd and that the Lord was shepherding him through these circumstances in his life. We find ourselves continually in this world of ours with circumstances like that well in around us. I took a screenshot of this a tremendous upheaval that they've had on Wall Street with the small investors who found a way to bring some of the giants of Wall Street to their knees through what they call our short sales on the stock market. And I'm looking at the screenshot right now. It says there's a picture of a man that looks brilliant looking man. It says Melvin Capital Management, the hedge fund that has borne the brunt of losses from the soaring stock market prices of heavily shorted stocks, recently lost 53% in January, according to people familiar with the firm. Hold on just a moment. These are the vagaries of this. Melvin was founded by Gabe Plotkin, a former star portfolio manager for hedge fund titan Stephen A. Cohen. It started the year with about $12.5 billion and now runs more than $8 billion, but that figure includes almost $3 billion that has been infused into it from another company. Who no doubt, by that infusion, gained shares in the previous company. So here's a star hedge fund operator who had a fund that was worth $12.5 billion. Now each billion, remember, each billion is 1,000 millions. So 12.5 thousand millions of dollars, and in a single day, practically, it went from 12.5 billion, somewhere under 8 billion, 5 billion between that. And so here's a man that was no doubt, he's the head of this hedge fund. He was no doubt a star financier before the whole world. He's been brought low. I doubt that he knows God as his shepherd God or his shepherd king. I doubt that he has the comfort that we have of knowing the Lord in this way. We're just simple people. We don't have thousands of millions of dollars in any, none of us. We might dream of that sometimes in our foolishness, but we don't have that. But what we do have is this Lord who promises to take care of us, who knows our end from our beginning. He knows every circumstance that will influence the affairs of our lives. And he tells us through the mouth of David here in Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters." When David fell in his sin with Bathsheba, because he got up on the other side and because he sought the Lord, his life was not destroyed. In fact, his life went on. He is recognized as being one of the most sensitive men in all of history to the Lord. When he was flying high, when he was coronated, when he was having victories, he walked with the Lord. And in the depths of despair and the grievous embarrassment of having his sin known by every man, woman, and child in Israel, in the midst of that graphic embarrassment, he knew that the Lord was still his shepherd. The most important thing in David's life was not his peace of mind or his being in control. The most important thing in David's life was that God knew him and cared about him and made a sacrifice for him and obtained righteousness for him and promised to walk with him and to be with him throughout his life. And so he knew something of the green pastures of God and the still waters of the Lord. And he knew something of the restoration of the soul. Look at this psalm. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. How many people in this world do you know who have had their soul restored? Who have been able to talk about that? Even in the church, we don't talk about those things that much. We should. And if I ask you biographical questions about your life, that's what I'm really looking for. Will you tell me how God has restored your soul? And then in the second half of verse 3, he says, he leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. What is the purpose of our redemption? Our purpose of our redemption is not to feel high. It's not to be excited like some charismatic service. The purpose of our redemption is to be like God in the sense of being holy like him, being holy in the sense that he created us to be holy, and to be righteous in the way that he created us to be righteous. There is no greater feeling of happiness, goodness, worth, virtue that we can feel than to simply feel righteous before the Lord, to feel like we are creatures that are behaving as God would have us to behave. So the feeling of righteousness is exhilarating. When we go to heaven, this will be our feeling. Every moment of our lives, it boggles the mind. We only have intimations in this life of righteousness. It boggles our minds to think that we shall be righteous every moment of our existence, every day of our lives, every moment of every day. Boggles our minds. And yet this is our shepherd God who walks us, and that's the purpose of being in covenant with the Lord. So on that account, he leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. On that account, it says then, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. See, there's no evil that can come upon us that even begins to compare with our feeling of shame and sin, especially in proximity to God. And therefore, the feeling of righteousness is the very opposite of that. We're not feeling indicted. We're not feeling condemned. We're not feeling caught. We're not feeling guilty. We're feeling righteous. How do we feel righteous? How do we have any sense of righteousness? By our proximity to the Lord Jesus Christ. He is righteousness itself. He did everything right every day of his life. Every challenge, every question, every thought that Jesus had was righteous. And then, of course, in faith, he offers that to us. He says, take mine, I'll take your sin, you take my righteousness. This double swap of which we speak so often, in terms of the doctrine of justification by faith alone. And based upon that, David could walk through the valley of the shadow of death and he would fear no evil, because evil, whatever evil was there, was minimal by comparison. Psalm 37 that said in the first verse, fret not thyself because of evildoers. And that struck me because it was post-election and because there's so much going on right now in the public sphere. There's so much wickedness. And wickedness is being piled upon wickedness. We cannot begin to discern it. And yet these things are not beyond the Lord. The Shepherd King is ushering us through this life. And so there's no need for us to fear evil because of the covenant relationship that we have with Him, this arrangement that we have, that He will look upon us not as we are in our sin, but He will look upon us as if we are clothed with the righteousness of His Son. The same Son that He said, "Thou art my beloved Son. Thou art my beloved Son." He looked upon the Son with affection, with love, full affection. And so the Lord, in the Church of Christ, the Lord does prepare a table for us, before us, in the presence of our enemies, the Lord's table. He gives us His blessings despite whatever things we lack. The psalmist closes Psalm 23 by saying, "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life." Because he had obtained the pearl at great price, even before the coming of Christ, he understood the love of God. And he said, "I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." The Lord has provided a place for us in the Church of Christ as a pasture where we can obtain peace and friendship with each other, where we can have friends that love us, that aren't trying to get up on us or gain advantage by us or through us or over us. It's an unworldly place. It's a lovely place. I love the Church of Christ. I see there are many criticisms that we can make of the church at large today, but there's a loveliness to the Church of Christ. Psalm 46 says, "A river brings streams that gladden the people of God within the Church of Christ, because that stream is Christ, and He feeds us and He anoints us. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul." What an absolutely positive picture this gives us. The Lord gives us this in Psalm 23. He wants us to carry it around with ourselves. He wants it to be in our back pocket. He wants it to be a constant provision with us. And so He has made this a favorite psalm of the Church of Christ from down through the millennia, from before the coming of Christ. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." And so we're going to close now by singing another version of this from our Psalter. This is Psalm 23 again, but it's 23B. I really encourage you to learn the psalm, memorize the psalm in its narrative text as well as in the Psalter, because you never know when you're going to need it. It's good to have in your knapsack or in your backpack. You can always pull it out. The best way is to have it in a place that it can't be stolen from you. Has to memorize it. And so I have done imperfectly. I remember stories about Corrie Ten Boom being caught up in the Nazi prison camps in World War II, and it was scripture passages that she had memorized by which she was able to nurture the other prisoners. They had stolen, the guards had stolen anything that they could find. If there was a hidden Bible or something like that, they'd stolen that. But Corrie Ten Boom had memorized many scriptures, and so she had many Bibles at her disposal. So make Psalm 23 a precious thing that you memorize, and it will enable you, it'll save your soul.